denominational divisions into an area where we could conceivably agree. The question I want to ask is, to what extent, as you spoke specifically about working with American Jewish World Service in the context of liberal aesthetics, so what do you see as the space where it's necessary or desirable to have unique Orthodox social justice organizations, and where do you see it as a goal to, right, to just integrate Orthodoxy and to fit it into the broader Jewish social justice world?
Great. So just one thing I'd like to clarify is that I work for American Jewish World Service before I work with Green Aesthetic. And that's actually very important. So I was in Kol Bei Torah. I was interested in philosophy. So I had studied John Rawls, talked about social justice, Michael Sandel, Charles Taylor, you know, this communitarian conversation, very academic. And I was sort of an academic. I went to Gershon Yeshiva University and was trained in the Gritzker method, which says that Torah Lishma, the more focused the Torah is, the more the Torah is just for its own sake and sort of not related to reality, the better it is in a sense. The more holy it is, perhaps. When I was in undergraduate university, I heard a story about Rav Sal Dizek, who was talking, he was learning about Nila Hassango on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, what type of shoes you could wear. And someone asked Rebbe, well, what type of shoe could we actually wear? And he's like, I'm not a shoe salesman. Right? You know, he was more interested in the distinction. So,
could we answer that question?
So I had, while I was in Kol Bei Torah, I started to work with some activist Jewish organizations. I spent a summer in Chicago working on the South Side of Chicago and some of the housing projects. I worked with the American Jewish World Service. And one of the reasons we really set up this forum is that doesn't carry over into Orthodoxy. So an American Jewish World Service, right, it's great, pluralistic program, food is kosher, there are a couple of kids who went to Gush and Migdalo, the yeshiva, there are a couple of people who didn't know what a yeshiva was, and we could all be together and doing this amazing work. But that conversation, when you talk about Jewish values, you go into Yeshiva University and you say Jewish values, they don't know what that is. They know mitzvot, they know alav, they know chiyuv, they know kesher, asher, etc. I think the point there is that each community, each denomination speaks its own grammar, right? In the deep sense, they have a sense of what it means to be Jewish. And not that they're very different. And Orthodoxy speaks a grammar of hichayus, of obligation. And in order to impact that community, we have to, as some of the other panelists talked about, create resources, create responsa, create literature. Rosh Hashanah is coming out with a social justice Haggadah supplement, focusing on food justice, and if anyone wants one, please email me, and I'll be the simcha happy to send you that. But we have to continue to create resources. But not only do we have to continue to create resources, we have to continue to speak that language. And I think that's one of the roles that we as Tzedek see itself playing, in the sense that we're insiders. I'm an Orthodox insider. The language, the grammar of Orthodoxy comes very easy to me. I'm just used to it. I spent years and years in the beat and the drops. And I think that we in the Tzedek, or Orthodoxy, have to create its own internal social justice language and grammar that goes along with the mitzvot and Talmud Torah. And now to get to that second part, there's something called the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable. Has anyone heard of the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable? Oh, one person, great, Donnie. But the Jewish Social Justice Roundtable was founded, was convened by Nathan Cummings Foundation about 4 or 5 years ago. They realized that there were all these social justice organizations, and wouldn't it be great if they actually were starting to speak to each other and create a strategic vision of the Jewish social justice agenda in America. So American Jewish World Service, the CEOs of amazing organizations, Diamond Greer from Jewish Funds for Justice, Rabbi Mark Saperstein from the RAC, Ruth Messenger, of course, American Jewish World Service, are on it. And recently, Uri Lusedek joined as sort of the Orthodox partner. And it was great. I was at my first session, at least quarterly, for about 2 days, talking about what it means to create a vibrant social justice Jewish community. And they were just so thrilled that they had an Orthodox representative.
that we would have really said it happened to be there. I admit that there are lots of differences. But I think that in order to create a common agenda to really affect change on a national level, I think that we have to work together. We have so much power with all these different organizations, and some work on more Israel specific, and some work more on food, and some work more on the different denominations. But together we're much more powerful than we're united. So, and this is always the question of particular versus universal, Jews versus Gentiles, Orthodox versus the other denominations. But I think that there are differences, and we all speak our own languages, and we have to embrace that. But we also have to come together to create a united Jewish front.
I apologize, I kept in front of the question about shoes. You got to wear my sweater, and I got to do a little sweater. We'll put it in a little warm and enjoy that. I want to use the last question as a way of framing a lot of things that have been said in the past hour. I'll start with a story that comes from my own work as the Center of Monitor Leadership. One of the things that stimulated my work in the past 5 years is having conversations with professionals about the books of halakha in their profession. And discovering that many of them have read the book and never considered that they should affect their lives. So we brought in, 2 summers ago, we brought in a series of Orthodox journalists in the context of studying the book Lashon Hara, and discovered that none of them had really considered the possibility that the book Lashon Hara were relevant to journalism. I have conversations with doctors all the time in which they speak with fascination of the medical halakha textbooks that they read. But again, when it comes to making decisions in their lives and careers, it's not relevant at all. So I want to ask a two-part question to Mr. Sports, which I think comes out of this whole conversation. The first is, a lot of what all of you have said is the need for a new language in the Orthodox Jewish community. But there are 2 ways in which that language shift can happen. One is to say that we have adopted a narrow legal discourse and we need to shift to a value-based discourse. And that requires one kind of giant cultural shift if we're going to change the sensibility of the community to from being a pure law-based sensibility to a value-based sensibility. And the second question is, if what we say is not so much that we want to have a value-based conversation, but we want to have a halakha-based conversation that addresses large sections of life that have thus far been ignored. We want to have the halakhos of what it's like to run a company. For example, do we currently have the resources to do that? If a group of rabbis got together right now and produced a consensus document about how one balances environmental concerns with fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, would that matter to anybody? The first is, if one wishes to shift to a value-based conversation, we should state that, that we're trying to change the nature of the community more broadly, and thought that how we're going to do that. And if not, I'm interested in what it would take, your estimation, to create the resources to say something meaningful.
I think it's a profound question, and I tell you the answer itself, because I absolutely believe that unless we switch from, if we don't switch to a values-based discourse, the approach of compliance, the language of compliance, is a reductionist outcome. I've seen this over 20 years in the so-called human rights practice in contract factories. So when we started, I'm a third-generation guy, so I grew up in a factory. And so when we first started manufacturing other people's factories, we simply went outside of our home with the same values that we lived inside our home. It was unnatural to imagine behaving differently. That was a culture point. That was a values point. It wasn't a checklist. It wasn't a certification notion. It was a set of values you took with you. And we got out into the world of other people's factors and found that our values and their values were very different. It was hard to understand how you could look at what was going on in the shoe factory with the same eyes that I was looking at and see, you know, different worlds, different universe. And so we went through the past 15 years of really hard work on compliance, kind of with codes. The code of Falaha. It says, this becomes this, not this, not this, this. What I've learned, and I'm very careful about how I say this, what I've learned about Falaha is that it can be a blunt force if you don't, the words need, there needs to be an active, dialogic experience of any philosophy notion if you really want to walk away from the conversation and say you understand. I can make it more visual. The very first time I asked Rabbi Samuel a lot of questions, I had a very specific question. Can I do this? And I remember in the old Tri-Phil standing very sure, took me by the hand and walked us around the chairs, and I asked, can I do this? And I was waiting for the answer, and I wanted an answer. And he looked, and I would say, he stood there, he didn't have one, he was looking, and he said, what do you say? And I came to you for an answer, and he modeled the conversation about, if it's simple, look it up in a book, you don't need me. Right? That's not a values-based conversation, that's a compliance-based conversation, and you will never win that battle. Never, never, never. We have 1,000 trillion inspectors, and you can fool them in 10 seconds if you want to. Either you shift the discourse, and then it's not just the discourse. The discourse creates the energy for a different worldview. If you don't create a different worldview, and you're in compliance with, look, the federal government can't stop the flow of illegal drugs in America, and so I'm going to stop the mistreatment in a factory. It's impossible. That doesn't mean you don't create a compliance framework. I understand that. But that's not the objective. That's hardly even a sufficient circumstance. You've got to change the conversation. And so we now have, on the level of factory compliance, we spend 50% of our energy in the factory and 80% of our energy with the workers outside the factory or the leadership, the people on the factory. That's 130%, and my math's clear, because you can't avoid making sure that they're absolutely not screwing their workers in whatever this place is. And they're paying their wages, and you can stand on the street, and you should get as far as you should. And I'm inspired by that. But we have to attack within the heart of it. The dislocation of somebody that says, I'm not going to pay my workers' wages, that's a values breakdown, and you can manage that behavior conversation ad nauseum. They will win that. That's a task approach. You'll never win that. But you have to reframe the conversation so that people begin to understand what's the problem that we're trying to solve. It's not that you're not paying your workers overtime. It's that you don't understand the connection between the values that you espouse and the behaviors that you live. That's what we have to attack. And we spent 20 years in our industry trying to change the language, and it's an overnight success 20 years later. I mean, we increment, and all of a sudden someday people are beginning to resonate with the language, and the language creates possibility and imagination too. If we're going to if we're going to pick an element of Jewish social justice that we're going to fight for, then it can't be as simple as a tuda on a storefront, because it can't be. Then we'll have a debate about the Star K versus Tabak, and we'll circle, right? And we'll have a certification conversation. But we need to go to the heart. How in the world could a Jewish businesswoman live in the world of business apart from her Jewish wives? How could that possibly exist? And that's a different conversation than apply for certification. So, you know, these 10 steps to us, both efforts, the compliance notion and the reframe that relates to values, to me, they need each other. One without the other is heroic, but not going to be sufficient. We have to get through a conversation, and we have the conversation. We have the textbook to make this up. We don't, at the heart of our value system is indisputable text that will allow us to have this discourse with anybody, anytime, all day long. The treatment of workers is not something we have to sui generis to figure out how what's the Jewish response to approach that. We just look in the book and have a conversation about it. We have the basics for this conversation, but we're not having it is a failure of imagination.
Okay, we're going to open the other questions from the audience at this point.
We were finalizing this wonderful evening, and I want to thank all of you for that. I want to sort of push what the better was maybe the elephant in the room here, which is the particularism of orthodoxy, the over emphasis on more and more new mitzvot that have little to do with the universal world. This would never happen in a reform level, right? I can't imagine an evening about this, because that's what they do. That's how they define themselves, a Jews, okay? And I think, by the way, we can learn a lot from what they do as Jews. But our world is so constricted, okay, by virtue of our practices, by virtue of our limits, okay, and I'm sorry to use the word, but it just comes out, it's called parochialism. We have a sense to look inward because of the way things are set up. I have never heard anybody say, if he's not from, he doesn't do some social justice thing, or he doesn't, you know, I'm sure that he's not a from Jew. But I've never heard any rabbi say, he's not a from Jew because he doesn't do social justice. But I think there's an inherent problem in our particular modus operandi that I'd love to hear folks address.
Do you want to address their assembly? Do you want to address it?
That's the panel too.
Oh, good. Yeah. We dominate rather white.
Right? 100%. So the first thing that comes to mind is Rabbi Yisroel Salanter. Rabbi Yisroel Salanter said that the material needs of my neighbor are my spiritual needs. Like the material needs of my neighbor are my spiritual needs. And that for me is very deep. I think that if you look at the tradition, going back to the Torah and throughout, yeah, it's full of the Hasid. And here, 36 times it says, you shall love the stranger. Emmanuel Levinas, who's this amazing Jewish philosopher, French Jewish philosopher, he comments on a passage in Brother Messiah of Hasoker Hapolim, one who hires workers, and he has this great, this almost magical saying about what Judaism is. It says it's sublime materialism concerned with desert. Because the Mishnah says that when you hire workers, that the custom of the land is to feed them dessert. They have to go ahead and feed them dessert. And he says, what's that Mishnah about? It's about worker rights. It's about how worker rights, how being an employee of someone, often leads to alienation. I'll just point out, when I was Rabbi Kaper's employee, it didn't lead to alienation. But it often leads to alienation, and that what Torah, what Halakha is about, is that sublime materialism is concerned with the basic necessities of life. And then you get to that question, right? I don't know what it is. It's a religious question, it's a sociological question. I heard that. I read it. The students are asking me, and I don't know if I have an answer of why the community decided to just focus on some of this ben adam l'malko mitzvot. Why the community just focused on chesed and didn't always go to tzedek, to social justice. How about you? I think that's one of the goals of the community in the next 10 years, is to say, when someone, abuses, exploits the workers,
we should say, we shouldn't give that person an allele or something. We should treat them, you know, we should treat them as pariahs within the community. I think that that's a goal for the community, and I think that it would take the effort and the passion of everyone in this community, everyone in Boston, all the Jews in America to get to that point.
I guess I would also add that the conversation would also not be held in more, and I say this in the right way, more part of the right-wing Orthodox community as well. I mean, it's this very niche group of us here, and not to take away from it, but it's a niche, isn't it? I mean, the non-Orthodox world stuff, they don't need to talk about it. And the right-wing Orthodox world, from my seeing and from some of the stuff that's come out in Israel, refugees do, just doesn't have a great deal of concern about that either. So it's just a few folks here.
Yeah. I'm going to choose another question from that. I want to address that.
I'm not going to add myself to the panel. Only that, I think that this is a project in process. And that's true for the Orthodox community, and I think that's true for society at large. I think two generations ago, social justice as a phenomenon, student service projects going out, also wasn't part of the communal discourse in conversation. I just attended a conference for rabbis sponsored by the Center for the Jewish Future from Yeshiva University. Rabbi Kenny Brender was telling the rabbis that they should know their activities and what Yeshiva University is doing. And he was very much with pride explaining that 1,500 students a year from the Yeshiva University system are sent on educational missions and service projects. 300 of those 1,500 are specifically for social justice projects, also going out to communities like the American Jewish World Service that aren't Jewish communities, Mexico, Nicaragua, et cetera. That has, Diana was mentioning, is changing the communal discourse. And even if the whole school isn't doing that, it's creating new models, new exemplars, and so it is a system in process. All of your critiques are 100% right, but it is a system in process, and we can be part of that new future. Please.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Richard. It's really impressive to my hand and we are how Orthodox students and how social justice. And you presented this really marvelous idea of how social justice gets to our Orthodox students, which is something I don't think we should do. The way that you were bringing up the lesson of the others earlier, talking about all kinds of good ideals and values that held the bottom lesson. I wanted to end the struggle with the first question about Orthodox and loneliness is that we tend to not think about halakha, but the value of it all. So we don't have a conversation, when we talk about it, and this is what we tend to see as liberal. A lot of the nation of the fact that he does and respect and work and strength of both challenges. So I think that would be probably a good, the central relationship is for us to learn how to bring social justice back into the Orthodox school as a way to talk about that. And instead of those being another pattern of the he is very dangerous at defining value. And part of it is trying to take it out of the conception and out of the way of specific things we can learn the curriculum or specific actions to take. I think that will come back around the goal. So I definitely encourage this idea of both curriculum development in school and school, how to make that conception down to specific numbers, text-based or not, but I don't think it's any more important. Thank you.
Thank you. I think a good idea may be to actually get like five people to say their question so we could just get the ideas out because I'm looking at the clock and we do have informal time also set up with refreshments. So if we could just go around and get a bunch of questions out, please.
So I have a patient who is an Orthodox Jew and owns two questions. I have not had a conversation with him about this. But I imagine in my head, if I did have such a conversation, his response would be something along the lines of, most of this book on the mitzvah. So, look, I'm using this money to, look on your lifestyle, it's the yeshiva, it's that. And Obviously, you need to have construction, but I'm wondering, is there, I know we've tried to shy away from using halakhic language because it has, like, the language of obligation, but is there a way in which we can use halakhic language to respond to this sort of, you know, I'm supposed to do a goal and do it in such a way in which we speak his language and then show him that this is a halakhic
value. Great time of question. Please, the young woman, the great thing I hear.
Something specifically as you're mentioning, I have a positive. You spoke a lot about your group identity and back time identity being directly influenced by your social justice values. I'm wondering what is the goal of the Israeli government? The goal of the Israeli government should be in implementing social justice values and doing social justice values in Israeli policy, and how that how you navigate that tension with sort of the greater issues of the Jewish identity of the Israel. Okay. So first of all, thank you all so much. It was such amazing. What several of you said about social justice being an alternative form of Jewish identification, I think is 100% true. Of young American Jews in their 20s and 30s, and that related to hyper-criticism of Israel. One of the things that I've seen on college campuses is that even when Israel does things that people could call social justice, like showing up first in Haiti, the reaction is, well, sure. Now, we'll have to move away to do social justice, but what are they doing at home? So, one of the questions I'd like to ask you is, how do you advise people in dealing with this posing of social justice as almost the enemy of Jewish people? In certain ways, that's the first question. And the second one is that I think that there is a certain resistance talking about social justice conceptually in the Yeshiva world, partially because social justice is seen as an external way of judging the internal world of the Yeshiva. What happens if the Yeshiva tells us to do something that social justice would tell us is wrong? And so there's a fear of setting up another standard of judging
education has come up quite a bit in different things people have talked about, and one of the ways to catalyze change is to shine the spotlight on what's working. And I'm wondering if there are any ways that within Yeshivot and Orthodox schools, younger than college age, but in schools and school-age children, there are stories that were ways or formats in which we could put a spotlight on and through that encourage students who are studying Malach full time to also do projects that are kinetic projects, so that becomes something that, you know, spreads as an interest and something that gets attention and is worthwhile and can lead more educators to go down that path.
Okay.
I just have a question that I heard before, Stan, about the Israeli government. I get that some of the similar questions to Ryan White and Jeff. We didn't do all the regulation government in America is, so for Rabbi White, in terms of lobbying the government to stand up for these values, and for Jeff, with that, let's say there could be regulations that when you are doing business to become mentor or
other people.
So I have a couple questions to that. What advice do you give for to an Orthodox Jewish person who's devoted to social justice, both in sort of how to on a practical level bring that to interaction with humans, you know, or how to talk to those people, and also advice for interaction outside of the Jewish community, you know, a religious person can be devoted to this, I think that's important in terms of what was important and how much it may be necessary and
important. Thanks, Tom. Again, thank you for this wonderful particular sophisticated panel. A pleasure. I have two questions that are really related. We're talking about social justice after the first definition. What exactly is social justice? Now, if one definition of social justice is the alleviation of somebody else's suffering, whether done in the context of chesed or done in the context of tzedek, institutional change, if that's it, is there any hierarchy that one can establish in terms of relative importance of different people's needs and suffering, just like you have in the Hotzaka, and the Echad, and the Echeres, and if it's Pikuach Nefesh, and if it's not, etc. So somebody says, yes, I believe very much in social justice, and therefore I'm going to donate $1 million to building a cancer clinic in Hatata. Is that social justice? And is that more or less important than Kabayoshev, or not? I'm not saying it is or isn't. What I'm saying is, it seems to me that needs to be more specificity in terms of operational definitions, both social justice and social equality, as well as hierarchical conception of different categories of social justice.
Great, thanks. I'm going to take two more, and then I'm going to ask each of our panelists to share some final. There are four hands up. Well, if you can limit your questions to really 20 seconds, why don't we just go to all four of you and then we'll go around. So please, and then we'll just go. Yeah.
This part's up
about
being born again. I'm going up to the school that in 2008 we had an office for in a Orthodox school for when we the only thing the doing a trial in the school. Also, and so I guess as we head to 2012, and it will come up again, I want to give you a thought on, I guess, the Orthodox role in American politics, because there's a lot of things I wrote here, and there's a social justice issue, and obviously you can go into some into this, but I think it's, you know, the Orthodox role.
Great, thank you. Okay, Joan.
First, thank you very much. You can answer all of these questions.
Okay, great. We're going to allow each of our panelists 2 minutes for concluding thoughts. And therefore, we offer them 2 minutes and they take four, it'll be sufficient. I wanted to go through all the questions because clearly we have a powerhouse of ideas, excitement, passion in this room. And this shouldn't be the only time that we discuss it or that it's the end of the discussion. So one of the things that we have to discuss as a particular shul, as a more general Orthodox Jewish community, part of the Boston larger Jewish community, and then as part of the greater community of humanity, is how we can continue the theme of this evening in thought, in speech, and in practice. So it's important to get all the ideas out. Clearly, it's going to be impossible to address every single point that came up, but I hope our panelists were taking the note on the questions they'd like to address. And I'm going to ask each of you to please share some concluding words and words of challenge and inspiration. And then, if you want to take some concluding words too, please.
I'm going to focus on the Israel-related question. If the challenge of most of the people here in the room is how do we connect our Orthodox identities with social justice, both on an individual level and on a communal level, then the challenge that the Mesedic has set out for ourselves is far more bombastic. Because we have set out for ourselves the challenge of how do we connect our Jewish identities with our social justice identities on a national scale. And when we talk about what a Jewish state is, we talk not only about public displays of ritual in Israeli society, which are important, but also the treatment of the orphan, widow, and stranger in our midst. And I think that that is a major challenge that also requires an entire development of both a values conversation, a halakhic conversation, a conversation, whether that's even possible or a good thing, but it is something that very much occupies our thoughts. In terms of sort of the Jewish peoplehood conversation, the social justice conversation, last year at around this time I spoke at the Jofa conference in New York, and I thought that it was actually a safe setting to say what I said, but the panelists got very upset. I got on a panel with a bunch of different Orthodox individuals working in a variety of social justice organizations, and they asked me to say something to the fellow panelists or to the audience, and what I said then was, if I put my Zionism aside, putting my Zionism aside, I do not understand how an organization that calls itself a Jewish social justice organization can wake up in the morning and ignore the largest population of Jews on this planet and the social justice issues affecting 7.6 million citizens in Israeli society on the one hand, nor can I ignore the potential latest in using a nation state and 7.6 million citizens as the most challenging and exciting experiment in Jewish history to create a model society and an engine for social change. Because AJWS with its $40 million budget, when you compare that to the GDP of the state of Israel and the potential of the state of Israel to do good, both within its borders and on the world stage, and how far we are from reaching that potential analogy, AJWS is a minor player if you compare the state of Israel. And when I imagine the role of the state of Israel, and this deals with the Jewish people of Congress, I know I lost my 2 minutes, I'm ending right now, I think that Jewish peoplehood is about a shared vision. And if part of the shared vision of the Jewish people 60 years ago was building the infrastructure of a state, and if part of the Jewish peoplehood vision 20 years ago was letting the Soviet Jews leave the Soviet Union, then it behooves us as a Jewish people to be creating a new vision for what the next project of the Jewish people is. Okay. And in my mind, if we can create a compelling vision with Israel at its core, what would it take in the next Shemitah cycle for Israel to be the first carbon-free country in the world? What would it take and what would it look like if the international Jewish community would issue a challenge grant for the Israeli government to be involved in international development work in the developing world? Those are visions that can be compelling to Jews regardless of whether they are Orthodox or not. And I think we need to be figuring out how to articulate those visions and not shy away from the thorny problems about Israel and Israel's place in the social justice community.
Something I heard from the panelists, it wasn't exactly a question, but they were thanking us for the conversation. I'd just like to pause for a second and to thank all of you for both coming and caring about this and for the great conversation and the great question. Two other people I'd actually like to thank specifically. One is Johnny Hatto, who's a rabbinic intern here, who put in probably 1,000 hours volunteer time to grow the Talmud literature around the country. Uri Mitzvah is a young organization. For the first year, there was no staff. For the first 2 years, for the next 2 years, I was the only staff for Uri Mitzvah. Recently, we've been able to expand. We hired an operations director, and then we hired Rachel Drustman, our program director, and 100% want to work in high school. That's really a constituency for us. And because we were a small organization, we're growing. That's very much on our agenda. To change the conversation, a comment I heard over here, now with high school students, we launched something called the Yosher Awards to publicize moral exemplars within the community. And that's on the business side, but we'd love to grow that and expand that to high schools. A very specific source, I'm not exactly sure where, but I can email it to you. He says, you shall not bring to a vow, you shall not bring anything abhorrent into your house. The Torah, Gemara says, that's talking about the Lord of Zara's paper. Hasim says, well, what's the Lord of Zara really? It's not just a fetish, it's not just an idol. It's a very fine sense of what a Lord of Zara is, idolatry is. What idolatry is really putting another, or putting yourself before another. Right? It's really the Yitzhar Hara. It's really a exploiting people. And he says specifically, wasn't really shouting to a body to your house, you can't bring anything that was seen through gezel, chamat, or rivet. Stealing money, exploitation, or through charging interest, which of course, you know, changes a little bit. That's what Tu'eva is. That's cherem. That is excluding that should be burnt. And that's really the question. I mean, Rabbi Shaul Salanter, I quoted him before, he was working at a matzah factory, he was like the Mashiach, 150 years ago, and he noticed that some of the workers were exploited. And he was like, wait a second, you're going to serve matzah, the lechem oni, the bread of affliction that was created by afflicted workers? There's something really wrong there. And there's so many things that we could be bringing into our Seder table that are, you know, we're born out of exploitation and abuse. Government, great, I love it. Government, got it. We should have great government. There are 490,000 businesses in the state of New York. We spoke to the Commissioner of Labor in the state of New York. There are 110 compliance officers for 490,000 businesses. Guess what? People exploit workers. I'm not blaming the Commissioner of Labor. I mean, I think she's working with what she has. And it's like, if we as in New York, you know, I don't know the exact stats in Massachusetts, but if we as a community, if we as, you know, in terms of our values, if we don't tell our legislative officials, our elected officials, that we care about these things, then they won't change. It's not on their agenda. And that's why we have the Tava Yosher. We have the Tava Yosher because people are getting exploited, and there are only 110 people looking at the books of 490,000 businesses. Social justice definition. I can't do it in 30 seconds. This to start the conversation, the Marcus and Marcus and amazing thinker over, I think, at Harvard. And in his latest book, Ideas of Justice, he actually says the Enlightenment tradition, there are two notions of social justice. One is called transcendental institutionalism. It's a mouthful. But that's like sort of the Kantian, John Rawlsian project of creating a perfect society. He says that's never going to work. It's been a fantasy since Plato. But really what we should think about in terms of social justice is looking at real world. And he said this is the other, one of the other afterthoughts, or one of the other traditions coming out of the Enlightenment, or more empirical thinkers like Bentham and Mill from England, which is let's look at real people, and let's not think about what perfect justice looks like, but let's think about what less and less injustice looks like in real societies, and copy that as much as possible. But in terms of the hierarchy of values, I mean, that's such a great question. I think one way of thinking of that is one way of thinking about government, right? And, you know, and that they could do less healthcare and, you know, things of that nature and change, like, change mountains. And then another way of thinking about it is grassroots, right? The space for NGOs around the country who are doing amazing work. And sometimes, and this is, you know, part of the hierarchy of values, the flip side, is that you have to grab people what they're passionate about and empower them. And sometimes it's not about the greatest need, because there are people dying around the world of easily preventable diseases, but it's what if someone is passionate about their environment, and even if that might not be the greatest need, I mean, some would argue that that is the greatest need in 100 years, well, let's empower that person to work for a solution. My last thought is about Obama and feeling alone. When Obama was elected, I ended up at 125th Street at Adam Crane Powell's office building. There's a tour there. People will go there. It's like 125th Street and Adam Crane Powell Boulevard. And wow, what a great night. I didn't feel alone at all. I mean, there were some elected officials, but there was such a party. There were people crying. It was such a powerful, powerful moment. But I think we have to, as a community, be better. And I think that goes beyond politics. In the shul I go to in Queens, which I grew up in, the rabbi got up on Pesach and called Barack Obama I won't say it in the shul. And he said he's worse than Paro, he'll never do tshuva. He went to risk with his family while the prime minister of Israel was waiting for 20 minutes. And that was, you know, when Barack, when Netanyahu was reading. And that was crazy. The idea that a rabbi in a shul would get up in the bima and use that type of hateful, spiteful language. So I think that there's definitely that part of it as well. Besides of whatever his politics are, there's still that racism, I think, within the community that we have to be better. I know I probably missed one or two points on trying to jot everything down. But this is, I just like to say my final thought, that this is really the beginning of a conversation, and I invite everyone, if they would like to be involved with Uri Lesedek, we're a grassroots organization. We exist because of the passion of our volunteers, and if you would like to be involved, please speak to either Razel, Donnie, or myself afterwards, and let's try changing the world together.
The only next speaker that I ran out for a second, I set up four stations of paper and some pen copies. I have many in your email addresses, so we'll make sure that they're distributed to all of us, but social justice research in the room.
I actually know what to say, which is I'm looking forward to Pesach City. Excuse me for saying that, but I have in mind Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and I B'nai Brach is my favorite part of the early part of the conversation, and I love the optics of the two leaders to the left and the two leaders to the right, and the young leader in the center. If you look at the order of the way the names are told in the section of B'nai Brach, and we all know the story better than I do from the Gemara about how there needs to be a change in the values. There needs to be a way to reintegrate the Torah, not a different Torah, then we just need our Torah to come back into some discourse. And so even if that meant having to depose the Nazi, and even if that kind of cataclysmic change needed to take place, even temporarily, right? The Gemara is very powerful. And so Rabbi Shimon Magana is pushed aside, and it says in the Gemara there, I'm paraphrasing because I just don't remember it exactly, that day the watchman was at the door of the yeshiva was was taken aside. Because then his assignment was, let nobody in, his inside is not like his outside. That's a very tough assignment to judge, right? How do people connect their values to their actions? And so when Rabbi Alexander Nazari was in charge, he said, we're going to take the view that everyone has a good heart, that they want to be connected to their Torah values, and so come in to the conversation and be part of building a vision of FedEx. And on that day, many benches were added, and they didn't check cards, and they want to come in and be part of building this wishing tent. What was required there was an inward focus. Right? The Rav talks about chesed and reward. This is a chesed notion. This is looking inside. Who are we as a people? And what do we want to stand for? And then there was the reward instinct, the reaching out instinct that said, we won't build a vision of FedEx with speeches. We'll only be able to build a vision of FedEx if we build a big enough big midrash where everyone's point of view can be engaged in a way that is powerful and compelling. And so I'm most pleased about tonight because there are young leaders in the vein of what Elazar Ben-Azari were, who are saying that the way it isn't the way it has to be, and that they will fight for it. So it's a hopeful way to end the evening and I hope and look forward to creating a clear view of what can be and an assistance that it be, and then assemble the strong souls that need to work to see it happen. And I hope and pray that it comes soon.
I want to thank the panelists again for inviting me to be part of this and all the time. It's been an incredible evening. So I want to say, first of all, that hopefully, although my technical ability is not super, I hope that that at least the other part of this evening will be up at the Center for Montessori Leadership website, montessorileadership.org, by tomorrow. Maybe we'll even get a video up. And the first thing that we should do is we should try and make sure that everybody else we know has seen this. This is not a... The first thing to do is to make the conversation extend beyond tonight, and let's make sure that as many people as we can in the Rebbe community are part of this conversation. The second thing, just taking out the point earlier, is this, and let's pick up our Sandler's point and support his language, if this is right now niche, well, our job is to expand that niche. And our job is to create a compelling Torah language of social justice, and we have work to do. Right? We need to have terms that feel authentic within the Jewish community as opposed to conscious. We can't say Tikkun Olam over and over again. Right? We can't do that. We need to have language that works within ourselves. I think we need to have some kind of specific telephone. So let's do that. Let's expand west and let's expand right. And let's make it work so that this is the vision of Torah Judaism that everyone wants to join. Because it gives them the capacity to live a meaningful, authentic, integrated life. So I'm hoping that we'll all join in accomplishing that. And with that, I will not stand to continue with the cookie.
And so we go to outside.
Oh, thank you.